Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
And if you are in a polygamy group and you would like to know more about what we do, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org. You'll find out a lot about our culture and about polygamy and what the Bible has to say about polygamy from there as well. And if you need help or if you'd like more information or if you just wish there was a better way than polygamy, there is a better way and we'd love to tell you all about it. We do have a toll-free number. It's a hotline number. If you would like to give us a call, it's 877-425-9993. And I would like to remind all of our viewers about the Adams Road Benefit Concert that's coming on September 17th, 7 p.m. That's a Friday evening, hosted at Mill Creek Baptist Church at 1515 East, 4500 South in the Holiday area of Salt Lake City. Adams Road is a Christian band, and they have some wonderful Christ-centered music. We think that you'll really enjoy the evening. We'd love to have you come grab 10 people and bring them along. This is certainly a worthy ministry to support. And also, I'd like to mention our guest next week will be Helen Radke. She's going to return. She was here last week, and she'll be discussing more detail about the LDS baptisms for the dead rituals that are taking place in Mormon temples. And she has some information to share that is very shocking, and it actually should shock all of our viewers and scandalize us as well. So to be sure and watch our show next week as she does share some of this information with us. Mormon fundamentalists are those people who believe in and they follow and practice the fundamentalist teachings of Joseph Smith from early Mormonism, and that includes polygamy. We wonder why the Mormons hate that word, and we get chastised all the time for mentioning that it is Mormon fundamentalist, and it is, because Joseph Smith is the first Mormon and he started it. There are many different polygamy groups in the United States and also in Canada, and probably the best, most well-known of all of the groups are the FLDS. Now, many people will use FLDS as a generic term for all polygamists, and that is incorrect because each group has a different name. The FLDS right now is probably the most well-known because of what's going on with Warren Jeffs, but they have communities in El Dorado, Texas, in Pringle, South Dakota, in Hilldale, Utah, in Colorado City, Arizona. They also have communities in the state of Colorado and Nevada and California, and pockets of families virtually all over the United States. They also have an LDS communities up in our over across our northern border in Canada. Tonight we have the opportunity to interview a researcher who is here from Canada. She's doing research on polygamy, and since she's only going to be here for a few days, I called her and asked her if she'd like to be a guest on the show and share some of her research with us, and she so graciously agreed on such short notice. She's a working psychologist with a master's degree, and she's finishing her doctorate in counseling psychology at the University of Calgary in Calgary, Canada. She's employed as an individual and career counselor at SAIT Technical College. I would like to introduce to our viewers and welcome to our show, Terry Scoville.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
It's great to be here.
It's great to have you, and you've got some wonderful information. We had a chat yesterday, so she's got some good information to share. So we'll just get right into what she's doing about your research. You have chosen to do a research project for your thesis, and you chose polygamy. Would you tell our viewers why, what you want to accomplish in your research with this and why you're doing it?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, when one completes a doctorate degree in anything, you have to write a paper, basically a book. And so in the PhD program at the University of Calgary in counseling psychology, you can choose any topic that relates to something that you're interested in. Mm-hmm. And so first and foremost, I had to write a dissertation to complete my PhD, and this is the last step to finish it, is to finish this document.
Great.
And secondly, probably one of the overarching things is that all of my research and all of my interests have literally been in the area of women's issues, particularly women who are marginalized. Mm-hmm. And so that's always been a part of my entire, now going on 14 years of education.
Wow.
And when I started thinking about 5 years ago about what will that dissertation topic be about, it was in 2005 when the government of Canada started asking people to do research about polygamy because they didn't have enough information, and Canada had just passed a law which allowed the marriage laws had been changed, and so same-sex marriages had become legal in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And they were under the impression and the belief, and may perhaps some under the fear, that polygamists would take our Charter of Rights and take that freedom of religion mm-hmm. clause that's in there mm-hmm. and challenge the Charter of Rights and say that polygamy should be, the freedom of religion includes polygamy.
Okay.
So they didn't have enough research, so they asked people to research. And I thought, well, that strikes me right at home, because I have polygamy in my background as mm-hmm. I grew up.
And that is that why you chose polygamy for your paper?
It's one of the reasons. One of the reasons.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background. Tell us about your great-great-grandfather.
Well, okay, so polygamy touches me through my great-great-grandfather. He was actually born in Massachusetts, and in the late, early 1840s, arrived in Nauvoo and was a bodyguard of the Prophet Joseph Smith.
Hmm.
And he served several missions, and he and the polygamy part is he had five wives, and he is a very revered man in our family.
Uh-huh.
And I always had questions about, I would ask different people, well, what about the polygamy part? You know, like how many wives did he have? And I just never knew the information that wasn't really forthcoming in my family. Yes, we knew he was a bodyguard. Yes, we knew he was faithful. But uh-huh. the conversation sort of petered out after that.
Really? Did he have journals or any, you know, anything that you could give some details of his experiences?
Well, anyone who's been to Nauvoo, Illinois, will find that there is a Scoville Bakery there. And it's the bakery that my great-great-grandfather established. And it has been restored.
Mm-hmm.
And that I actually went to Nauvoo a year ago just to have, because I wanted to visit the birthplace of polygamy. It wasn't the birthplace of my grandfather, great-grandfather, uh-huh. Because my great-grandfather wasn't born until they had moved across the plains. He was born in Springville, Utah.
Okay. So they came west with Brigham Young.
They came west with Brigham Young.
Okay.
He was the only polygamist. His name was Lucius Nelson Scoville, spelled slightly different than my name.
So your great-grandfather...
Great-great-grandfather.
...was the only polygamist. Your great-grandfather and your grandfather were not then.
Not.
Oh, I see.
They were not.
I wonder why they weren't. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know that part of my story.
Yeah.
Certainly, my own grandfather, I never ever spoke about it. So... I have no records there.
I wonder if something happened with your great-great-grandfather's story that would have stopped the rest of them from doing it. In case some of our viewers may not be aware of what's going on in Canada mm-hmm. right now, currently as we speak, with the polygamy issue, they're a little bit further ahead than the United States has come as far as dealing with the legal issue of polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
Would you explain the polygamy issues that are facing Canada at this time and how this is fitting in? It just seems to be fitting in so well with your own paper.
Well, there was recently, I believe it was January or February, I can't remember the exact month, but it was 2009 that two polygamists from an area in southern British Columbia, which is a province on the west coast of Canada, near Creston, British Columbia, two men from the community of Bountiful, which is their polygamist, the name of their polygamist committee, or community, Winston Blackmore and I forget the fellow, other
James Oler.
James Oler. Forgot his first name, but James Oler were both charged not with abuse, but with practicing polygamy, because it is illegal in Canada as well, and has been since Confederation in 1867. So, but what they did is finally found a prosecutor who would prosecute them on the grounds that they were practicing something illegally.
Right.
And I suppose the thing that, which most people don't know, is that he was charged with that. Both of them were charged with that. And in October of 2009, so just 10 months later, all charges were dismissed.
Right.
And under the, I guess you could call it the loophole that they had gone out looking for a prosecutor who would actually prosecute. So they said that they had gone out sort of headhunting.
Yeah.
That's the impression I get. I certainly haven't read all of the legal documents. And so because that has now been dismissed by the Supreme Court of Canada, what has happened just recently, just in the last few months, is Winston Blackmore is now suing the government of Canada for mental strain and for the muddying his good name So he is now suing Canada.
He's a very bold man. He demanded all payment for all of his legal fees while he was being charged.
And he doesn't deny being a polygamist, and he doesn't deny having, I believe it's 26, approximately 26 wives and 100 children. He does not deny that.
Right. He doesn't. No. Absolutely does not. A part of what's going on in Canada is the debate of whether they should legalize it or decriminalize it, or I guess three choices,
part
or keep
of the
it like it
going
is.
On in the U.S. as well, but it certainly is, and that's why the government has asked for more information, because the polygamists are asking for decriminalization, not legalization.
Would you explain what the decriminalization of polygamy is as opposed to legalizing polygamy?
Well, if you decriminalize polygamy, then they can't be put in jail, because they're not doing anything criminal. They can't have their property seized. They can't be accused of doing anything illegal, because it's not a criminal, it's not against the law, it's not a criminal act. So it wouldn't be seen as something worth pursuing, because there's no criminality to it. Whereas if it were legalized, then there would be laws and rules and regulations that would be set up for just like any other law that has, you know, that is implemented, and then they would have to follow those laws, and so there would be a lot more laws to follow. Whereas with decriminalization, they probably can pretty well go about their business and do as they please.
And I can see why they would want that. Polygamists, well, even beginning way back with Joseph Smith, they believed. In fact, Brigham Young gave a speech where they're above the law. And so if they legalized it and then set laws and guidelines in place for the practice of polygamy, they would think they were above the law anyway, perhaps.
Well, there's certainly, by overtly saying, I practice polygamy and I have so many wives and so many children, and stating that so openly, it's like a challenge to do something about that. And because no one has ever, there has been no ever...
And I think that's what Winston Blackmore is doing. He's bold enough to challenge it.
Yes.
I just read in from the Toronto Sun an article this week where it says the Green Party voted down a motion to push to decriminalize polygamy in Canada. They said 82% were against decriminalizing it and 18% were in favor. Now, this is not a final vote by any means, but this is just one of your parties.
No,
up
there. And the Green Party would be like, oh, 0.02% of the population of Canada.
It's interesting.
It's a very
to see
small
the
party,
way they're,
or
the
or
way
maybe
they're
1%.
Yeah,
yeah.
They did mention that the speakers in the workshop were careful to define polygamy as a marriage between multiple spouses. They made a clear distinction between polygamy between consenting as adults and a polygamous sect, which would be the Mormon-based polygamy sect in Bountiful, Canada. And as I read this, where they have been alleged to be involved in domestic abuse, and I don't know of polygamy yet that isn't, but Mormon-based polygamy groups, they're not dealing with, and this will be my next question to you as well, in your research, the women really don't have a choice. They, even if they're 18 or 19 when they get married, they really don't have an informed choice, because when they're born and raised with this brainwashing, do it or be damned, and they're never taught anything outside of the group that is viable. Mm-hmm. So even if they are of legal age, do they really have an informed choice?
Well, it is interesting that the women I have talked to make the choice that they're capable of making, and the informed choice would be that the only information they would have had, almost without exception, although there are always exceptions, but they would not have received any outside input into their lives of any kind under the sort of the Mormon polygamy, because they don't live normally, they don't live in any community where they can get other information, or they're not schooled. They're not given enough schooling to, and of course the books are all censored. And so where would they get, you know, define informed choice? Mm-hmm. Most of us would say informed, so they can make a decision among many.
Mm-hmm. Where they can compare their choices and compare the what's good or better or best.
Yes.
When you first began your research, Winston Blackmore had not yet been arrested, though,
no,
right?
No, he hadn't. But there had been much talk about how British Columbia, the government of British Columbia, was going to handle this.
Uh-huh.
And they had a prosecutor who would not prosecute. So they went out and found one.
Who would, and that's why they quashed the charges.
And that is why it was squashed, because they feel like they went out headhunting for the right person to persecute, you know, to... Well, and it's really, it's ironical, because you think, well, to go out and find somebody who's, I don't know, brave enough? I don't know what the word would be. Somebody who believes in the law and will go and make sure this law is obeyed, or try to prosecute. Yeah. There's a good slip of the tongue.
I don't even pretend to understand the legal loopholes. It blows my mind. You made the remark that many Canadians don't realize that Winston Blackmore is the only polygamy group. He's not the only representative of polygamy, but he's the most visible, and so therefore they believe he's the only really one they're dealing with.
I would say most Canadians are aware that polygamy is an issue in the United States, recently an issue in Canada because of Winston Blackmore, and I think most of them believe that that's it, that there is this small community in British Columbia. Now, most Canadians do know that Canada is facing a number of families who are immigrating from Africa and from the Far East, where polygamy has had a long tradition of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're thinking about what are we going to do about these families who are immigrating, who are already polygamous families from other countries.
So they've got some pretty intense issues that they are dealing with to try and determine what to do with this problem of polygamy. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned about the human trafficking that's taking place across the border with, and that's been an issue that even people in the United States are upset that nothing seems to be done about it. And it's going on much more frequently than we dream.
Well, now the very really, really interesting thing about that is, think about it. If the group in Bountiful didn't have fresh blood, they're a very small group compared to how much polygamy there is existing in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So if they didn't have fresh blood, in, you know, they would be marrying brothers and sisters soon.
Which the Kingston group is doing.
Okay. And so in one of the interviews I did in this last week, one of the women who I spoke with actually said that when her entire family left the Bountiful area and moved to Colorado City, they were just welcomed with open arms because it was fresh blood.
Oh, isn't that disgusting?
And it was new sons and new daughters, you know, to introduce a new line of a new family into mm-hmm. the group. And so they were almost courted, mm-hmm. she said. And they were just so nice to begin with, and everything just seemed so wonderful to begin with.
Yeah.
Because here was a group, a fairly large group. It was parents, grandparents, and kids who had all moved more or less within a short period of time. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the same is true where they would bring people from the Colorado City group up to the Blackmore group.
Yes,
and integrate them
absolutely.
Into their group too,
absolutely.
As well, for the same reason. Well, let's get back to your research. You have been doing interviews, and that's one of the reasons that you're down here in this area at this time, mm-hmm. because you wanted to interview women who had been in polygamy. Would you explain who are your main focus for your interviews and why?
Well, the main focus for the interviews are women, and actually I should maybe tell you the title of my research because it is revealing in what it is I'm looking for. The title is called Transition and Identity, Women's Experience of Leaving Polygamy. Mm-hmm. So I'm very careful to explain to the women that I talk to ahead of time is the story of their experience in polygamy. Of course that's important to telling any story, that mm-hmm. that's their life, they lived it. But there's so many women out there who are very afraid of being identified, not for themselves so much, but if they happen to have a daughter or a sister or a child or a parent who is still in polygamy, then if they are identified, they know that their relatives will receive some kind of punishment.
Right.
And what I've been told, very very abusive.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be treated very badly.
That's true.
So what I am actually talking to these women about is their transition. How did they find the ability? What resources were there? How did they get out? And then what was their transition like? And you know, we end up talking about the length of time it takes to transition.
Mm-hmm.
And who are they now compared to that? You know, we all have identities. We say, well, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us have role models to choose from and say, oh, I'd like to be more like her or her. And she's a school teacher. She's an engineer or she has her own business. But women coming out of polygamy have very few role models.
Right.
They have one.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
generally, yes.
Generally, one role model, which is women are to marry, produce children, and their role is to do the things that are associated with that.
Mm-hmm. Serve their husband, serve the priesthood.
So my question is around how, when you come out, how do you find who you want to be? Who, you know, that question, who am I?
Yeah. And you wanted to interview women who have been out long enough so that they would have more of an objective viewpoint on their experience?
Well, we know as psychologists, as therapists, that if you leave any marriage, any relationship, or any something that is really, really important to you, it takes time for you to emotionally heal.
Mm-hmm.
To move forward with your life and begin to develop who you want to be or who you would like to become. So,
or even find out who you want to become. In my case,
there's a lot of exploration to be done.
Yeah.
It's like, who am I? Okay, well, maybe it's this. And no, that wasn't it. Maybe it's this. And so there's a lot of exploration to be done. And there's a lot of emotional work to be done out of polygamy. I'm just finding just how much longer it seems to be taking women to do their emotional work, to get stable, and that, and by stability I mean just a sense of I can do this, I can stay out, I'll be okay, I won't be going to hell. And the two biggest fears I've been finding are, number one, I'm going to go to hell if I come out, and the second one is I will lose my family.
Right.
So to get through those first few couple of years, I don't have a definite set part amount of time, but it's definitely around 2 years that they would have left polygamy.
Without violating any confidential issues, can you discuss some of the most surprising responses that you've encountered, that you've gathered from some of your interviews?
Well, I can tell you a few things that have surprised me that aren't specific. And one of the surprises is it seems like most of the women who get out take many, many, many years to work through this idea that they are not going to go to hell. It's seems to be, I didn't realize that it would be so ingrained that leaving would be, that would be like almost the number one concern. It's right along there with, I will lose my family. But it seems that most women who do leave have family on the outside who often will help them in some way. Yes. So
I think now that would be more prevalent now than say when I left. There would be more people out because there's been more years for people to leave and be able to. When I left, there were, I didn't know of anyone that could help me.
And I think that's probably true. And I have heard that there are changes since the whole issue, the legal issue with Warren Jeffs. What I am hearing is that there are things are changing.
Out of necessity and for no other reason. Legal necessity.
Well, legal necessity. And the people, it seems like the women within polygamy are going, are talking amongst themselves a little more. And so they just say, yes, things are changing. We just don't know what's changing or how it's changing. Yeah. We just notice a difference.
And that's good if it's bringing good changes. But if the changes aren't something that, if they do it for fear of the law, they make those changes for fear of the law, they can't be permanent. They would have to be changes that make a permanent.
These are changes long-term. Amongst, it seems, what I've heard is amongst the members themselves.
That's good.
You know, the outside contact is allowed more. And that kind of thing. So
that's good.
What
about the free agency women? We know this culture, Mormon culture, polygamy culture, all the same thing, preaches, pontificates on free agency. Yet when someone tries to practice that free agency, they are shunned. They have huge repercussions. Have you got some information on that?
Well, I actually brought something that when I read it, it was like, oh my gosh, they're talking about my journey. So I can tell you a little bit about this piece I read, and it was in a psychological journal. Someone had a feminist writer had written about do people really know if they have free choice? And it was about, do women, I'll give a little background. Her topic was around, are we essentially, do we have essential parts of our nature? And are men and women, I don't know if you've heard of the book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From
Venus?
Heard
of it. Yes, okay. I haven't read it, but I've heard of
it. So if you think along those lines, an essentialist view would be that men are from Mars and women are from Venus, and that we act totally different because of our gender. where there's another point of view that says maybe we're a lot more similar than different, and that the differences aren't innate, that they're socially learned.
Mm.
And so one of the examples I often use when people say to me something about, well, you know, the extol the virtues of women, I talk about when slavery, and I don't even pretend to know a lot about this topic, but a little bit about it, because Canadians, by the way, study American history as well as Canadian history. So we know a fair amount, or we've learned a fair amount about the slaves, mm-hmm. and the Civil War. So what I say is, you know, what if you had the situation where a slave was treated really, really well, in fact, so well that he really felt like he had complete freedom, his family was treated well, his wife, he had some land of his own or some things he was allowed to do on his own. And so the idea of leaving the master or the family that he was that owned him, and American history sort of supports, there were cases like this,
mm-hmm.
where he said, you know, I don't feel like a slave, and I'm going to stay, he or she. And so he or she became so absorbed in the belief that this was the best life,
mm-hmm.
and that any other life was not suitable to him, that he didn't see his slavery as slavery. And so he would become an advocate for his own slavery. And so
it's kind of a twisted back turn into it, isn't it?
It is. So the article I read here simply was about, imagine a scenario where women have begun to recognize that they've been marginalized, and they started to assert a little bit of their own self and say, you know, I want some of the equal rights, and I want a little bit of liberty, and they become a little more conscious, and then the men whom they're associated with start to get a little bit of afraid of this idea of these women are becoming more conscious, a little more awake.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they do, if you're a member of the long dominant male group that had been in charge of all these women, the first thing you might do in this society as a group is you would start to tell them how who they are is intrinsic, their way of being. So a woman's natural state is to be kind and generous and giving and motherly, and you're the perfect, men don't raise children as well as women do, and men can't do what women can do. And so sort of the conspiracy is to convince women that they are good at a particular thing, and when they come to believe that they are better at, women are better at intuition and mothering and taking care of others, then they will come to believe this so deeply that they will stand up and defend the men, that the men get to have all the power,
mm-hmm.
and we women, we have this job.
So they'll vote against themselves.
They won't see it.
Yeah.
They absolutely won't see it.
That happens.
And brainwashing and cults do
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah. They did that in the early Mormon when the vote came. Utah was one of the first states to give the women the vote, and that was so the women would vote the way a man has 12 wives. Those 12 women would vote the way the man told him to vote.
Mm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
the only reason they got the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are ready to open up the telephone lines if you have calls. Questions or comments that you would like to ask our guest. We're asking our callers to please respect our guest tonight and the topic that we're discussing. Our guest is Terry Scoville, and she is doing a research paper on women's rights and polygamy, and we would like to have our viewers call in and keep on topic. If you have another question that is off topic, you can email them to us or call in another show, but please stay on topic when you call in tonight. Our phone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. You made a remark, and just before we go to the next call, I would like you to well, maybe we better wait till this one. This might take a little time. It's one of my favorite remarks. Okay, we're going to take a call from Douglas from Murray in line one. Hello, Douglas.
Hello, how are you tonight?
Very good. You're on the air.
Joseph Smith, as he moved across the country with the church, when he reached Nauvoo, he was the head of the militia. He was the head of the government. He was the military leader. He was the president of the church. And there were times when some of the general authorities and many of the people of the church were beginning to become a little bit dissident against some of the doctrines that Joseph had introduced. And so he would bring about a new doctrine, and polygamy was one of those. He was a power-hungry guy. It wasn't necessarily money, but he was power-hungry. When they reached Utah, my family's have the name of Allred, and they're from Delta and Ephraim and different places, and there was polygamy in my background. But I could see where Joseph Smith introduced new doctrines to regain control of the church, in the whole church. Do you feel that there was that kind of control and power mongering by Joseph Smith? That's basically my question, is did you see that kind of thing happening?
Well, in my opinion, I believe that Joseph Smith had a very, very large ego. He was very charismatic, so he was able to convince people of changes that he wanted to make. And some people call them revelations. Some people call them...
Doctrine,
revelations, and some people call them just outright ego and lies, and everyone is entitled to their belief, and some people believe one and some people believe another. By the way, I was going to tell you that there are a number of Allreds that moved north to Canada during the time that polygamy had been outlawed in
Utah.
So I'm very familiar with the name of Allred. Many people, at least one family, moved north to Canada.
It's a very popular name.
Yeah, Joseph Smith was someone, even his own wife, Emma, had a very difficult time with polygamy.
Emma,
I don't think she really believed in it at all. She didn't even know about many of the wives that Joseph had taken.
Right.
Isn't that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's my understanding. I know I didn't say this to begin with, but I was raised Mormon and left the Mormon Church about 15 years ago, and there was a lot I never did know. So I was not aware until I started reading outside material that Joseph Smith had wives, had taken, well, the term wife is very liberal. He had secret ceremonies where he was united with other women. Mm-hmm. Despite Emma's objection, and it was done in secret.
Even more than 30,
altogether. 34 total wives.
Two of my four sons and I have left the Mormon Church to become born again of the Spirit evangelical. And we're the only ones in eight generations coming from Ohio, from Kirtland, who ever left the church to truly become born again Christians. And it's been... You know, there's a lot of our family and a lot of our relatives that either fell away with polygamy and different things or have stayed with the church and believe that they can become gods and goddesses someday.
Okay, Douglas.
Those kinds of doctrines.
We've got other calls coming in. We do appreciate your and your input.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have a wonderful evening.
Thanks. Good night. Bye. Okay, we have David from Salt Lake City. Hello, David.
Hi, Doris.
Yes, you're on the air.
I wanted to make a comment from the New Testament, first off. First,
David, is this on topic of what we're talking about tonight with our guest?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
I think it does. Test all things, hold fast that which is good. So to all those ODS out there. Now, I want to give a challenge to anybody that's listening. This has to do with DNC 132 as well, which is about polygamy, obviously. Orson Pratt said this, convince us of our errors of doctrine, if we have any, by reason, by logical arguments, or by the Word of God, and we will be ever grateful for the information. Orson Pratt, of course, was an apostle. Now, he's talking about the doctrine, and the doctrine 132, DNC 132, that's part of doctrine. That's what you do every week when you come on the air. So I pose that question to every LDS person that's listening out there.
Okay, we thank you, David. We appreciate that. Good night. Okay, let's get back on to our discussion that we have. The question I would like to ask you, Terry, is you have asked your interviewees if there's any redeeming quality in polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a very surprise. Would you tell our viewers how you asked the question and what kinds of responses you've had?
Okay. So my one major and main question to begin every interview has to do with simply is the question of what is your experience of leaving polygamy? And I just say whatever you want to say from there, and go ahead and express yourself, and then I ask questions depending on which direction they go. And when the interview is over, and I thought these interviews would take an hour and a half to 2 hours, well, they've been 2.5 to 4 to 6 hours because
there's just so much there,
and they do want to talk about it. But the very last question I have asked every single person is there any redeeming quality about or of the practice of polygamy? And by redeeming quality, I just mean that, sometimes even though you might run into a person who does something to hurt you, they have characteristics that make them decent people in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a redeeming quality. It's a quality that might redeem them even though you may not agree with, in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
So specifically, I've asked these women, does polygamy have any redeeming qualities? And without exception and without hesitation, it has been a resounding no. No, polygamy has nothing about it.
None of the women that you've interviewed have ever said there is a redeeming quality in polygamy.
Not one. Some of them say, the people in polygamy, and I said, no, I'm not talking about the people you love, because we all know that the people you love might have qualities, even though they are trying to get you to live this law.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about the people. I'm talking about the principle of polygamy, the law of polygamy. Mm-hmm. Is there anything about that lifestyle, that and those laws you had to live? And they think about it. Some of them will think about it and go, oh, well, no, if you mean just polygamy.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Absolutely not.
And, I'd like to challenge our viewers tonight, especially those who have come out of polygamy. I know a lot of polygamy people in polygamy groups watch the show. But if there are ladies that have left polygamy and you would like to call in and weigh in your own personal answer to her question, we would love to hear from you. 801-973-TV20. Are there any redeeming qualities in the practice of polygamy itself? And we're not talking about your loved ones. I still have a lot of family in polygamy, and I love them. They're wonderful people, mm-hmm. and there are wonderful people in the groups.
Well, the and these wonderful itself, people have come out of polygamy that I have talked to.
Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah.
Yes.
I came across another, and this is regarding the Canadian court case, the polygamy laws that they're dealing with, and they're taking affidavits from several different people in the research that's going on to whether or not to make polygamy legal in Canada. And one of the affidavits they took was from an Oregon nurse practitioner, and she filed an affidavit after years of treating women in polygamous marriages, and she says that they are more likely, polygamous women, are more likely to be depressed, to suffer from anxiety, and to have low self-esteem. She said that the women she's treated lead her to believe that such lifestyles are harmful. Would you agree with that in the women that you have interviewed? Would you agree that polygamy is harmful in the any respect. But
well, actually, and this is taking it back to another question you said, but also expanding on it in that way. What I discovered in the interviews is a number of the women left because they were, well, it started because they were physically ill. One woman was nearly dying. Another one couldn't eat, like she was just physically sick. And one woman was near death. In fact, she had had several children. I don't remember how many, 7, 8 children. And she was in bed for almost 2 years.
Hmm.
And in asking her about that, she said that she was just sick at heart, but it had manifested in her body, which is really interesting. And
yes.
And the part that has come out of that is most of the women I've talked to since have become healers in some way or another. They found a way to become healers themselves. So either they find a ministry to heal the soul, they've become some kind of a therapist or a health professional to heal the body and the soul.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing to me how many of them have come out to heal the body,
mm-hmm,
as well as the soul,
mm-hmm,
because they get so physically sick in that journey as they're beginning to get ready to leave, as they're, mm-hmm, starting to think about,
mm-hmm,
leaving. Their body tells them something, and then it takes a long time for them to go from the body to the brain where they can form this, I need to leave.
It's really a long process.
It's a very long and difficult process.
We have an off-the-air question fits right into this conversation. How does a woman begin to create an identity after leaving polygamy? I'm sure you've had some interesting women you've interviewed, their journey.
There are so many different ways.
Yeah.
But it seems that most of them go into almost a cocoon for a while. You know, the butterfly, you know, the larva goes into a cocoon, and in the cocoon you're wrapped in yourself, and the world is outside and there's just you, and that's like being with yourself, that's just being with you and herself and trying to sort of let the old go and take a little bit of time of the new. But very, almost without exception, these women talked about this cocooning place,
mm-hmm,
this cocooning stage, where they couldn't just jump into something else.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, most women
That's
who did jump into something else jumped into something just as
mm-hmm,
abusive.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so true. And from my own experience, and as I expressed to you, I did not find my identity, my true identity, until I found my value, because I had no value as I was growing up, and I was, mm-hmm, repeatedly told that, and I really didn't find my value until I realized God valued me.
Mm-hmm.
And once I knew that I had value in Christ, that I had value and that God did love me, that's when I really began to heal. Before that,
you cannot give what you do not have. So if you don't have any self-love, and you don't have any self-care practices, how do you teach that to or give that to anyone
when you're raised believing that God is going to hate you for doing the very thing that you did to survive, and you're living on the hatred of God, then you find out the opposite is true. It's, mm-hmm, absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then He gives you the love, and,
mm-hmm,
my value just exploded at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Before that point, I didn't have that. All right, let's take a couple phone calls if we've still got some time. We have line one, Kathy from Pleasant Grove. Hi, Kathy.
Yeah.
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. What's your question?
Hi, Doris. Here's my question. I'm wondering, how has leaving a polygamous relationship affected the sons and the daughters who have come with the mother who has left?
The family that leave with the mother.
Yeah, but I want both sons and daughters addressed, please.
Well, you know, that would vary according to the family and according to the state of the mother when she leaves. And sometimes, in rare incidents, even the mother and the father will leave together. But usually it's the mother with the children. And it is quite a process of healing for the children as well. Probably not as difficult, but they are leaving family behind. They're leaving the only life they have and the only friends they had as well. So it is also a process, but they seem to adapt a little bit easier into a new life than adults do. Getting back into a school they've never been into before, public school, for instance, and being able to play freely with neighbors and people that don't believe the way they believe. But it is a healing process. Have you
it is, and one of the comments I would make to Kathy is that, having interviewed women who have had children, it seems like that the girls tend to have a tougher time. Again, they've been brainwashed, that, you know, so have the sons, but the girls still have the tougher time, it seems, because the men have been told they do have some value, and the women and the girls
That's
have told
true.
they do not.
That's so true.
And often you will see them they don't fit in the outside world and they don't fit in the inside world, so they're in that in-between stage themselves, that in-between place. They're referred to on the outside as the polyg kid,
mm-hmm.
even though they no longer belong in polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
Do they come to appreciate their mother?
Some do, some don't. That's my research is showing that it depends on how close they were to their mother to begin when they left. Not all appreciate their mother leaving.
That's right, they don't.
Even if they stay out.
The children normally, if they're not real young children, they've been brainwashed to believe the only way to God, the only way to please God is to be in that group and to live that lifestyle. And so when their mother takes them out, they can be very angry with her.
How about 10 years later?
Kathy, can I ask you a question? If you know or are you experiencing this yourself?
Oh, no, I'm not.
Okay. If you know of anyone...
Friends, mother had recently left polygamy, this was 10 or 15 years ago, and had seven young children, and of course they were very poor, she was very courageous to do it, and I'm just wondering, on the average, if the children eventually come to see what a sacrifice their mother has made, and what good has come of it.
That would depend, Kathy. We really wouldn't know. It's individual.
Psychologists have a saying when we're asked this kinds of question, which Doris just reiterated, and the word is it depends. So every case, every single person will be different, depending on what they went through and where they want to go, and Every individual has their own mm-hmm. experience of polygamy,
yeah.
whether they came out as a family or not.
And it might take even years later, and it may yet happen even years later. So thank you, Kathy.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Mm-hmm, bye. Well, we're getting toward the end of our show. We have very quickly, Terry, I want to thank you for coming and sharing. Can you say in 20 seconds or less what your personal opinion and reaction of polygamy is?
Well, I come from an LDS home where we weren't really allowed to speak about polygamy, and even though I had questions, I just simply couldn't seem to get the answers I wanted, and it would often come out as, we'll discuss, God will take care of it, it will be
yeah.
discussed in the afterlife, let's just not talk about it, let's, you know, not discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
But my opinion has always been the same. I didn't see any redeeming qualities of polygamy,
mm-hmm.
although, and that's the reason I asked that question is because as an LDS child, I was told, LDS Mormon, mainstream Mormon, I was told that there were advantages.
Yeah.
And you know, the list was fairly large.
Yeah.
And that And so, but and one thing I will say is I'm still looking for participants who, so if there are any women who have left polygamy, specifically women who were sister wives in the polygamist, I am still looking for people who would like to tell their story.
So if you're interested, you can email us, tv@aboutpolygamy.com, and I will connect you with Terry. Thank you, Terry, for coming tonight. You know, it was recently I was contacted by someone who wanted information about leaving, and I asked her if there was something that would keep her from leaving, and she said the two heartbreaking things we've talked about tonight, first, she didn't want to lose her family, and second, she didn't want to go to hell. And, you know, beginning with Joseph Smith on down tonight, that is a lie, a dirty lie from hell that absolutely is not true. If celestial marriage is required, then God is a deceiver. Jesus died on the cross in vain, and we're all lost in our sins and condemned forever because Jesus Christ died on the cross to accomplish what you think celestial marriage is going to do. But celestial marriage cannot wipe out one single sin that you have ever committed. All of that was taken down on the cross, and that's where you're going to find everything that you're living celestial marriage to do. I want to thank you for watching the show tonight, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email@whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.